John, I don't want to wake you up.
What?
John, I just want to, can I tell you something?
What time is it?
John, listen. Ugh. What do you think, what do you think I'm the most picky about in this world?
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I'm still waking up.
Just answer.
I don't know. How did you get in my house?
Well, I mean, you can be very particular about some things. Yeah, I mean, maybe you're a big Oxford comma guy, you know? Always got to do the comma after the and.
Listen, I'm definitely pro-Oxford comma, but that's not it. Keep guessing.
I know. Okay. You don't allow different foods on your plate to touch.
John, that's kind of your thing. Food doesn't have hands. How would they touch? You're wrong again. The thing I'm the most picky about, guess it with me, is
candles.
Yes. Candles. Yes. Yeah.
I should have said that.
So many home candle scents smell unnatural and chemically.
Gross.
And after learning that the candle industry contributes to an insurmountable amount of non-recyclable waste, carbon emissions, and toxicity in our air, I am even more prickly. And picky, John.
And picky.
Yes. Give me two words that start with P, and those are the two I'm using.
You can choose both of them. That's fine. Dave, I heard that almost 2 billion candles, that's with a B, are sold globally every year, and almost all of them are likely to end up in landfills for the next million years.
Oh, man.
So here's my question.
Yeah, yeah.
What can we possibly do about this?
Notes Candle has the answers. Notes created a refillable candle system that allows you to use your candle vessel again and again. And guess what, John?
Again.
Oh, so you don't become part of the problem. It's so easy to use. The candles are made with fragranced wax beads. And they're wax, John. This is what I want to tell people. They're not whack wax.
They're not.
It's really great.
It's
wax,
legit.
Okay? They're awesome. All you do is place the wick in your reusable, John, notes jar.
Okay.
Fill it up with wax beads. Not whack
not
beads,
whack.
John. Enjoy your fragrance for up to 36 hours, and then just do it all over again when you're ready for a new one.
Okay, so if I'm following you, that means that I can switch out fragrances all the time.
Yeah.
Because that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, next question, Dave.
Okay.
Tell me. Do they have a candle that smells like bougie and luxurious and calming and also warm?
John, that's the Santal and Atlas Cedar candle.
Okay.
Personally, I love the coziest scent imaginable. Sweet, but also a little spicy, like you, John.
Uh-huh.
So I went with the vanilla and pepperwood.
Ooh.
It's perfect for movie night or just cuddling up on the couch.
I love it. All right, so be a responsible consumer while not giving up on high-quality home fragrance by making the switch to Notes. Make the switch and build a starter kit. Right now, Notes is giving listeners 15% off and free shipping when you buy a Notes starter kit using the code DADBILL at notescandle.com/DADBILL.
That's notescandle.com/DADBILL for 15% off and free shipping. It's wax, not whack. DADBILL. Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
John Tyson.
So here we are. We're in Dadville. We have... Johnny Tyson with us, who's coming all the way first from Australia. But
that's
then
a long way to come for a podcast.
It is.
we are so honored.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But then through New York City with a small break in Franklin, with a small little trailer park, you know, stuck in the middle there. And so, John, you and I, we talked about this just a second ago. We've met before. Me and John Tyson were old friends. We had a band together while you were in Franklin that never really got off the ground because your lyrics were a little too Australian. I remember the country label saying. This is really fun. John and I are excited about having you on for a lot of reasons. I am such a huge fan of what you're doing in the space you're in. You know, I feel like it's been fun. Podcasts have been like the new, you know, obviously with this podcast, but I've had a lot of fun listening to interviews with you. One of my favorite podcasts I've listened to a long time was the interview you did with John Mark Comer, and the two of y'all was just like in heaven, because I think you guys have such a gift for what you both do. But I think together it was really fun because it's like, you know, sort of like Captain America and Iron Man chatting. So it was
who would you say?
I'm not going to say. We know, but I'm not going to say. Who would be you in that conversation? That's a really good I don't know. Well, I don't want to say.
Maybe you can't be Captain America because you're Australian.
Hey, there it is.
Maybe that's the deciding factor.
It's just solved itself.
But I've been such a fan. I love your sermons, the way that you sort of approach this generation, you know, and how intentional, which is a theme here, but you know, you've been about the way you've lived and y'all moving to New York and starting, you know, your church there, which has been amazing. But I was so excited because, you know, I was talking to one of our friends, Annie Downs, and I think she had mentioned that you had a new book coming out about being a dad.
Yes.
And especially pertaining to your son. And I was like, well, this is the lowest of hanging fruits. And so it was this perfect, you know, like, oh my gosh, not only can we have him on, but this is a great chance to talk about, you know, this new book of yours and what it's about. But what we start all of these with, John, is that we do a little, what we call the getting to know you and the brag sheet. And so I'm going to read to the folks out there kind of a little about you, and you can say how much of this is a lie, amend it, or just, you know,
you can just
jump in at any point. So John Tyson, which is you, is a pastor and church planner in New York City, originally from Adelaide, Australia, which is a long way from New York. John moved to the U.S. 20 years ago with a passion to seek and cultivate renewal in the Western church. He's the author of Rumors of God, Sacred Roots, A Creative Minority, The Burden is Light, Beautiful Resistance, in the book we'll talk about today, which completely blew my mind and scared me to death, The Intentional Father. And this is something else I want to talk about. I'm not kidding. I told John McLaughlin and I were chatting about this before, and I was like, John, I don't know that I've ever read something that was more terrifying and intimidating, but really great than this little book. I mean, I got through with it, and I was like, well, it was
a
good
run.
What
I do want to say,
hang on,
Dave,
you've read The Intentional Father?
I read it yesterday. The entire book.
Dude,
in
you've
one
got a
day.
Copy of it?
Yeah, Annie Downs brought it over. She literally drove it to my house.
I don't even have a copy of that book yet. I literally emailed my publisher this morning. I was like, yo, am I getting any advanced copies of the book? Oh
there
my
it is.
Gosh, that's hilarious.
I haven't seen this yet. Look at that.
How does it feel when you hold it in your hand? Is it
it's
a hard copy?
Great, man. I you can see the mark. I've marked it up and everything.
Oh, gosh.
I honestly want to say, like, it actually is very cool. Like, it's a very,
it's really cool.
Like, tactilely is cool. Aesthetically is very cool. And again,
Dave
got this book. When did you get it, Dave? On Saturday?
I got it Saturday, and I
today
read it
today is Monday. Whenever this is coming out, today is Monday. But he read the entire book
that's
in
amazing.
One day.
That's amazing.
Now, I was out of town this weekend, so for the duration of this conversation, I'll be doing an impression
of
an individual,
with the book. Yes.
Fictitious, of course, for the sake of rounding out our perspectives. I'll be doing an impression of someone who hasn't read the book yet.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I got to finish reading this thing. Okay. So the other thing that I think is, I hope we have time to talk about too, is the Primal Path, which is, John, it's just amazing, man. I want to just applaud you for the work you've done, not only in these books in your ministry, but so you also made the Primal Path, which is a practical course to help overwhelmed but determined fathers, which, I mean, all that is just the same words to me, overwhelmed but determined fathers, create an intentional process for walking their sons from adolescence into manhood. Also, for the last 15 years, you've lived in Manhattan, and you serve mainly as the lead pastor of Church of the City, New York. We are so excited to have you here. I just want to tell you that. And as you can imagine, it taking this information in over one day, there's a lot of questions and a lot of thoughts I have. But one of the first things, because I think this is so significant about your story, because it's so, this really is amazing, and I think it's really unique, is talking about you leaving Australia at the you know, young age. Was it 18?
I was 20.
20? 20.
20.
Okay.
20. I dropped out of high school. I did an apprenticeship as a butcher starting at age 16. And it took 4 years. It was like I was a legally indentured servant of I was legally indentured. That's the phrase they use.
That's literally the phrase.
Yeah, as an
So you dropped out of high school and then started working at the butcher shop?
I was working at the butcher shop before when I was 14.
Oh, okay.
And then I had an amazing visionary boss who basically said to me, drop out of high school and I'll teach you how to retire at 30.
You're kidding me.
No, incredibly visionary leader. And he said to me, you're a leader. He said, you know, buy your first house when you're a teenager, get a very short mortgage, 10 years. You pay it off in half that time if you're smart. Buy your second house, have a rental property, And by the time you're 30, you'll have your house will be paid for. You can work one day a week as a manager. So I bought my first house when I was 19.
What?
Wait.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the Steve Martin joke where he's like, how to get $1 million and not pay taxes in two steps. And the first step is get $1 million. And then how did you buy a house at 19?
Well, I was working full time since I was 16. And I worked in like a very rough neighborhood, and all of my co-workers just basically got paid, got drunk, and came back to work. And my boss said to me, look,
sounds
they
like
are literally
song.
Get paid and get drunk and get back to work. So he said to me, I remember him saying, when all the guys came in after the weekend, like sort of looking pretty shoddy, he said they've literally pissed half their paychecks away against a wall.
Uh-huh. Jeez.
And he's like, you got to do smart stuff with your money. You know, I'm getting this intel at 16.
Yeah.
So I saved up money and bought a house, and then was just like on my pathway. I became a Christian in the middle of that. And anyway, whatever. So I was an apprentice legally until I was 20. And the month after my apprenticeship ended, I moved to the United States to study theology. I got a scholarship.
So obviously the conversion is the paradigm shift here, because you're on your way to be like, you know, the young land, you know, Adelaide's
meet
biggest
livestock titan.
Livestock titan. I don't hear those two words in a row enough. Livestock titan. I'm immediately scared of that man, whoever that, or woman at that point. More scared of the woman if it is one.
So what were your parents? What did they say when you were dropping out of high school at 16?
I remember my mum saying, John, you've got so much more in you than just being a butcher.
Mm.
And I remember my dad saying, you're really good at it, and if it's in your heart, do it with all your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That was it.
And then you're like, cool, here we go.
Well, I mean, like I was working for, like I said, I was working for a pretty extraordinary guy. It's not like I was just like a slacker. I was like I was like a highly motivated, hardworking kid.
Wow.
And the idea of you can have your own butcher shops, and I'll show you how to like build a chain of butcher shops.
Wow.
Like all that entrepreneurship and all of that. I mean, I guess if I'd done any other field that had entrepreneurship sort of as a part of the framework, I would have just rolled in, but it just so happened I was working in a meat factory.
Isn't it profound? Yeah. I never know how to say that. Profound. Do I lead more into the profound or profound?
Just say it like an Australian and just merge it all together. Like profound.
It's a little bit of like a Babe Ruth moment where this guy kind of points, you know, he like sort of takes the bat and points into your life going, I'm calling this shot this early, to think that you have this man who is so benevolent and gives you this sense of purpose and calling and kind of says, hey, here's the keys of the kingdom. I'll show you how to do this if you want to do it. I think that's a pretty unique, and I'm sure had to make an effect. I mean, you think about the book, you know, The Intentional Father, and having these men that sort of come in and give you some sense of vision and calling. It's crazy that at that age, this guy was like, at my little 16-year-old dude working in my shop, like, hey, what do you need?
He did it when I was 14.
Jeez Louise.
He did it when I first.
That's amazing.
When I first started working there.
Yeah, do you remember remembering like that this seemed unique? Or were you like, oh, I bet he's just doing this. This is just what happens. You're 14 and, you know, butcher comes along and
no, I mean,
tells you
so
how to
I remember, and I remember very clearly I was, I remember thinking, I've got to get a job. I need some money. And I remember going to like the classified section in the local paper, and I saw a job that said hiring after school cleanup boy for Kentia Meats. And I was like, okay, that seems like a job I could do. It's not too far from me. I remember going there, and there was a line of like dudes around the block.
Holy cow.
I remember two things. I remember thinking, tuck your shirt in and tell him what he wants to hear.
No.
So I tuck my shirt in and said to him, why do you want this job? And I said, because I'm sick of taking money from my parents and I want to learn responsibility.
Holy cow.
And he said, you're hired. Dismissed
now,
everyone else.
Was that true, or were you like, because when I was 14, it's like, well, I want to buy clothes or whatever.
I spent a lot of money on clothes. On Stussy.
Yes. Shout out.
I had a VW camper, man. 16, my first car. I had this second car had this sweet VW camper van, a combi van. Used to go to the beach on the weekends, just surf, fill it up with meat, surf, eat like a king. Filet mignon surfing. 16 years old.
You were retired already.
That's right. You know that story about the fisherman at the end of the dock?
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, my point being, so I go in and very early on, my boss pulls me into the office when I'm 14 and he says to me, John, you're a leader.
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean by that? He goes, you're a leader. You got leadership in you. I want to develop you.
Jeez Louise,
and I was like,
man.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. So, you know, he's just a great dude.
Was he? Was really was that cool. The first time you had heard that? Had you
yes,
had other people say that?
So
for real?
Worked that up. Yes.
Huh. Jeez,
I was I was a witty, smart aleck kid.
Hmm.
You know, influential, could get people to do stuff, talk people into stuff.
Hmm.
And but what do you call that when you're a kid? You know what you call that? Survival when you're in high school.
Yeah, right.
It's a coping mechanism.
Right. Yeah. Right.
He was
totally.
Like, no, that's leadership.
Wow, that is incredible. So you have this conversion experience, and then I read about this in the book where you're on this hill, you pray this prayer about God giving you cities, and you just feel like, I just want to go to the States. I just have this feeling that I just have this calling. I have this sense of purpose in moving to the States.
Yeah, mate, it's as simple as that. I mean, it's like level of hunger for God at that point. I'm getting up at 4 a.m. I'm spending 2 hours in prayer.
Jeez Louise.
I'm just like after it. I'm taking communion every day on my knees like Smith Wigglesworth. I'm after it. And I just want to spend my life for the kingdom of God. And I just have this thing that's very hard to articulate, sort of like a New Testament vision.
Mm.
It's very, very, very hard to explain. It was almost like the... Yeah. Lifted off the earth. Here's what it is. It was like Google Maps. It's like Google Earth before I understood Google Earth. But it was like an experience of Google Earth and God saying, do you want to be involved in reaching these? And I was like, yes, I want to. It was an invitation. And then, you know, I felt like I was crazy, but I went to my youth pastor and said, I feel like I'm meant to go to America. And he said, why would God send you there? Australia's a secular country. America's, I remember he said this phrase, America's filled with seminaries, pumping out leaders, pumping out pastors. And I was like, you're probably right, mate, but I just think I meant to go to America. And then out of nowhere, a total miracle, I get a phone call at work one day and my dad says, you want to go to Bible college? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, all right, I've got your scholarship. There's one deal though. You have to be willing to go to America to get it. And I was
like,
let's go.
So there
was it, mate. Yeah,
that
so it's like, was that from God? Did I make that up? I don't know, mate. I've lived in America for 20 plus years now.
Worked out.
I'll tell you this. I will say this. The intensity and sincerity of my prayers in my teenage years are still being answered today. Two decades later, things are landing in my life from the total intensity and sincerity of my late teenage year prayers. I always tell young men, like, get your heart right with God and cry out to him to use your life, because you just never know the fuel they'll become for your destiny later in life. You just never know. I'm still seeing stuff right now that I'm like, I prayed for that when I was 19. Just
that
been
is
hanging
crazy.
In heaven waiting. Yeah.
I like hanging in heaven. Is that what we're going to do for eternity? Hanging in heaven. That would be a terrible book. I'm going to try to write in my 60s and speak on it. So
that's a skit that you're working on.
Hanging in heaven. There's so many bad jokes. So this book, I mean, I mentioned, you've got so many books. This is what was hard about this podcast, because it was, you know, there was another book. There's a lot of books. But this book, to me, felt so simpatico with what we're doing.
Glad you've been able to get a hold of that book.
Yeah. The one that you
say I literally can't believe this.
Well, I will tell you, Annie was like, you know, I texted her and was like, hey, because they sent us the last book. They sent us the
Beautiful Resistance.
Beautiful, yeah. And I was like, great, you know, but man, we would love the new one because it just feels like it fits the best.
Yeah, sure.
But that was like mid last week. So it was super last minute. So then I text Annie, I'm like, hey, what are the chances of us? And she's like, oh, I got a copy. I'll drive it over to you. So she comes over and little did I know, you know, I've got maybe the only one in existence right now, which is exciting. And
we'll sign it and we'll mail it to you.
We'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll put a little CD in there too, just of some songs. we'll just cover Mike and the Mechanics' Living Years and stick it in there. So it's the perfect.
What a song, by the way.
Oh my gosh. What a song. But with this book, I think for me, and I've felt like this a long time, and I think this is one of the things that's the most compelling thing about this book to me. If there's one thing that I could be as a dad, it would be intentional. Yes. Like if there's one thing, I feel like at any time, and this was even before we had kids, you know, I remember going to this wedding once and everybody that got up to talk about this guy, at their rehearsal dinner, that was the word everybody talked about, was just like how intentional this guy was. And anytime I get around men like that, I always feel the sense of like, that's what I want. I want to be the guy that's like got a plan, that's like not just going day to day, but it's like got a real sense of direction and purpose. And then, you know, reading this book, I'm like, oh, it's so, I mean, it's like I joked about earlier. It's so amazing and insanely intimidating because it is.
With the level of intentionality that you never would have got to on your own.
Oh man, I don't want to hear that. That's not
that's
feedback.
Not what I mean though. But what I mean,
reality you got to deal with though. And I'm doing the impression of the guy who hasn't read the book yet. But I skimmed a bit, and Dave and I have talked, and I'm already like, okay, I'm in. I want to, you know.
Okay, that book took 6 years.
Yes,
it was over 6 years.
Yeah. Well, yes. And I think that's what's so cool about it to me, because I think so. Part one of what I was going to say is a sense of like reading it and going, wow. But I think also realizing what's amazing about it is the time that you dedicated to it and how it unfolded over a long time. You know, it's not something where I'm just getting up and I'm going willy nilly into this thing. But when what is that? When you think of an intentional dad, like what is that? You kind of talk about it in this book, but like how do you think about that? Like for all the dads that are out there listening and moms too, just intentionality, what does that look like as a parent? You know, what is it that you feel like is so important about that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the greatest thing I'm trying to help dads avoid is regret.
Wow.
Is this the worst feeling alive is like, crap. I missed it. I got that wrong. Dang it.
Which is something I feel like every other night when I go to bed. I'm always like, I didn't quite get it right today.
So, yeah, and by the way, there's a difference between what your kids think you get right and what you perceive to have gone
sure,
right.
That's
so
a
at
great
the end
word.
Of the primal path, like I sat down with Nate and I was like, hey, so what did you take away from this?
Wow. You know,
and things, I've got an interview. When Nate and I are hiking across Spain doing the Camino de Santiago, I live podcasted that. So you can look up in iTunes, you can look up Father's Collective, The Intentional Father, and it's me and Nate walking across Spain doing the Camino together. And then I do an interview with him, like, what did you get out of it? So you can, that's
Holy
on the internet
cow.
Somehow. I'm trying to help dads avoid regret. And I think it basically happens with intentionality. So like I've got an exercise in there called the before they go exercise, where you simply sit down, you put a clock on and you ask the question, my time will be over before I know it. What do I want my kids to know, be, and be able to do before they leave? And then I'm just going to do my best to sort of like build something out. And I tell you, how many dads you've met who have a conscious process for that? They have a desire for it, but they don't have a process for it. Everything in that book that you read is intuitive. Everything, there's not a fresh, there might be a fresh concept in there, but that all of that stuff is already in every dad's heart. And it's just like, hey, here's a way to frame that. Here's an exercise to help draw that out. And that's all it is to me. An intentional parent asks the question, what do my kids need before they leave? And then I'm just going to build something to help them get it to the best of my ability. That's it.
Man, amen, first of all. But kudos to you. And I think what's so powerful is you do such a good job of laying that out. And I think you know, you have the book, you have The Intentional Father, and you also have The Primal Path, which is your sort of online course that gives, mm-hmm. which, you know, and are you kind of encourage starting that around 12, 13, right?
Yeah, you know, I do. Part of the problem in our culture is people fundamentally are afraid of male energy. So we don't know what to do with male energy in our culture. Like everything about men is bad. And I think a godly man is a gift to the world.
Wow.
And it seems that there's a great tradition in human societies. You know, it's like that African proverb. It's like, if you don't initiate the boys, they burn down the village. And there's something to that. Why do gangs exist? That's an attempt at formation into community. So all societies have some rite of passage around 12 or 13 puberty, you know, before the body is filled with testosterone, they teach men how to handle it and what to do with it. And so there's some point where you say, hey, everything's about to change. Let me get you ready for that. So that's what I recommend. But I've had dads do it as late as 16. You know, our church right now has turned it into a men's curriculum. We've got men going through that stuff, filling in the gaps walking through it. So
that's incredible.
You know, the world is racing to get back to normal and start meeting up in person again, and that's great. It's exciting. But after the year we've had, getting back to feeling normal takes time. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, I want you to know you're not alone. It's important to find the support you need to face those feelings and move forward. That's why I've been using Talkspace. Talkspace is great. It makes it really easy to match with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions all from the comfort of your device. The Talkspace app makes it easy to connect with your licensed therapist on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. So whether you're a parent, a student, a millennial, or just someone having a hard day, Talkspace can provide the support to help you feel better with a single message. Talkspace even offers individual and couples therapy in addition to medication prescription services. You can set goals with your therapist, and they can help make sure you're really progressing. Talkspace therapists help you develop tools to cope in difficult times like these. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code DADVILLE. That's $100 off when you use the code DADVILLE at Talkspace.com.
So can you kind of give as best you can, because this is a very weighted, loaded question, but if you can kind of give the flyover for what you're doing over the time of those years. So again, this is where you're like, dude, how much time we have? But you know, as best you can to succinctly sort of say, here's what the process looks like. You know what I mean?
So basically it's in four movements. So it's preparation. A dad has to like consciously come to terms with his own story, his own father, and his own history. If you don't do that, you know, whatever pain's not transforms, transferred, all of that sort of stuff. So it's like you got to figure your stuff out.
Yeah.
Then the process is initiation, which is like you have to consciously mark off some liminal space to invite your son into a formal journey into manhood.
Yeah.
Then you've got formation, which is the actual content of what you do. Here's what actually helps him move from adolescence into manhood. Right. And then you've got recognition at the end of it, which is like a new man has to be welcomed into the community of men. He's got to have a place to belong. So yeah, that's the four basic movements. And the way I did it is like I did a daily time with my son, you know, which is just like the daily connect.
And in the morning, right?
Yeah. And then we did weekly man school. It's like man school. You know, like people are like, what did you do? And I'm like, what didn't we do? And I mean, we did like everything that you would want to do at man school, practical skills, you know, like all the all the archetypes of life.
How much? So it begs this question. I'm giggling because I'm thinking of me doing this, and it's like,
How old are your kids?
They're 9. So I have two. I have a boy, girl, boy. So it's 9, okay, gotcha. About to be 7 in 4.
And then I've got two daughters.
So thankfully, yeah. So, and then John's
the stuff I'm doing for daughters, I'm happy to talk about.
Well,
I'm doing that right now.
We're going to get to that. Yes, like, we're going to talk to that. So here's how much did you find? Because I just feel like if any, I get so giggly thinking about this because I'm just imagining me trying to teach my kid like how to do something I have no clue how to do. But how much did you see that with yourself? Like, how much were you coming to these places where you're like, oh God, I don't know, Nate. Let's pull up YouTube and see if we know how to pick a lock.
No, it's like no. Yeah, like. How much of it was like that? 90% of it was like that.
Oh, that's good. Okay,
great,
good.
The great skill is not, Nate, let's pull up YouTube. It's, let me pull up YouTube real quick, take a few notes, and then reteach it like I came up with it. How much of that stuff's in? That's 90% of it.
Oh, yeah, but
that's when you're like, Nate, go grab the hammer that's two blocks away, and then you look up
go
the YouTube
video. Hammer.
Go buy a hammer. Well, this one's not good.
It was a lot of research, man. The great gift I got was filling in the gaps of my own formation.
Yeah.
So I tell dads, like, the greatest thing you will ever do for yourself is disciple your son.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because you love that. That very first step, does that begin? Is that the step that begins with you have to write a letter to your father? Is that
That's
right?
A part of it, yeah.
So what was that process like? Is that a letter that took 7 days to write or 7 minutes to write? Or what was that like?
Well, you know what Malcolm Gladwell says, mate? It's 80% reflection, 20% writing. So all the time, the time is not in the writing. The time is in the thinking.
Right. Wow.
You know, it depends on your relationship with your dad or if you have a dad or, you know, like, I mean, everyone has a dad, but like if you're in a relationship with him or if he's even alive.
Here's and what's what the intent of the letter? Like, if I were going to write this letter to my dad right now, what would you say? What's the direction?
So imagine this. Imagine you're not super intentional with your kid, or you do your best, but you don't have high communication.
Mm-hmm.
No real-time feedback on how you're doing as a dad. And you get through your life, and you're not in a place where you're asking, hey, how did I do as a dad? Where did I jack you up?
Mm.
Like, what are you moving through the world with? What are you carrying? What was a gift from our relationship? And you're just wondering as a man your whole life, did I get that right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then you see your own son with his own kids and you're like, holy crap, is he going to jack his kid up? Like you've got a bunch of like self-doubt and self-reflection. And then your son sits down and says, Dad, you're probably wondering how you did. Mm. I just want to just let you know specifically, here's all the gifts you gave me in your life.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the crazy thing is like, you know, my son's left me a couple of letters, like before he went to college, like I'll get choked up if I keep talking about it.
I'm getting before choked up right now.
Yeah.
Just hearing you talk about this.
Yeah. Before my son went off to college, he left a letter on my pillow and on my wife's pillow. And it's like barely, eligible because kids can't write with pens these days because they're just keyboard monkeys. But he handwrites this thing. And I was sitting there and it just touched the deepest part of who I am.
Yeah. What a
and I
gift.
Think that's what it Gosh. Does. It's like it heals something in a dad's soul. It blesses. It's a form of honor. Honor your father. How do you honor your father? Well, honor, it's a Greek word. To me, it literally means to recognize value. So you just stop and you go back and you consciously recognize all those sacrifices that you're now aware of because you're making them.
Right.
And you just say, I frame this up. I recognize this. Thank you. What does it do? It heals a man's heart.
God,
it helps.
So something something that you said that I think is such a big part of this, because, you know, as you said, to write that letter, you have to sit and think about your story, your dad's story, and you start filling in gaps and thinking, you know, and as you know, I wrote down these quotes, these two quotes, which I think are amazing. That's what fathers do if they don't heal their wounds. They wound their children in the same place, which is Cheryl Strayed. Is that right?
Yeah.
Strayed.
Yeah.
And then Richard Rohr's, if we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it. How do we transform those wounds and pains? Like what is that, you know, is for anyone that's listening, because John and I have really transformed all of ours, but
those who haven't already,
for those who haven't, and hear something like that, you know, it's a pretty overwhelming thought. If you haven't done that work, and you always will, because we're always, you know, dealing with more of those things. How do you tell people to do that? You know, if that's step one, what does that look like?
Well, I mean, there's another exercise in the book that basically helps you make, like, walk through the events of your life that have formed you, for good and for bad.
Yes, the chart, yeah.
Yeah, and then sort of sit with those things. I try and, like, be as specific as I can, like, name it, extract the principle, the wisdom from it. Like, you know, it amazes me how little we understand ourselves in our own stories. I spend a lot of time just going year by year through my life, and I asked a different question, not just, like, it's sort of hard to articulate, but it's, I try to do an emotional map of my story, not just a geographic or chronological
map. Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, what stayed with me? What were the loudest words? What were the deepest wounds? What were the highest joys? So you got to spend the time really understanding yourself.
Right.
And then in the places that are hurt, you've got to, like, get resolution with it. So sometimes you have to make repair and restoration with other people. Sometimes it's like healing and identity formation in your relationship with God. But having an awareness of it and the tendencies and the fruit and the patterns that are connected to it, like I talk to my son a lot. You know, I'd say, hey, this is like, hey, this is an area of my life that's a weakness because when I was younger, this happened to me. Or here's an area that, like, I'm good at because I experienced this thing and I've been really healthy connected to it.
Yeah.
So you want to be honest with your strengths and weaknesses, and you want to share out of them. Again, it's like, it's the moral authority comes from understanding your own story and the gifts that you carry. And so it's not just parables or secondhand nature or quotes or snippets. It's like you're prescribing out of what you've learned. It's your own sort of canon of wisdom that you're sort of passing on. So yeah, you got to sit with it. You got to process it in a healthy way. You got to be honest with it. And then, yeah, I think you got to just, be willing to repent in front of your kids when you get it wrong. And I think that that has its own healing, you know?
Yeah. I think about that a lot. Like, you know, with, for example, with you and Nate, y'all haven't done that work and you haven't done that work. You know, you would hope that when he comes to you and says, hey dad, this thing that happened either yesterday or tonight at dinner or 5 years ago sort of came back up and I'm feeling this certain kind of way, and sort of tells you in a way that you've hurt him. You know, the hope is that you know yourself, you know these tendencies, your shadow selves, that you go, oh my gosh, yeah, like I am capable of doing that. And that is something that I have done. And I'm sorry, you know, let's talk about it. And I think sometimes what you see in parents that haven't done that work is like, no, I don't do that. I wouldn't have done that. Or I didn't mean it like that, you know. And so you immediately have this
defensiveness rarely brings healing.
You know, yes,
like well self-justification.
Said. Well said.
I said, in a, you know, if he came to me and he said, hey, this happened, it really hurt me, I would open a conversation. I'd say, man, I'm so sorry. You know, that's not my heart. I'm sorry that happened anyway. Like, tell me the fruit of that in your life. Like, is there any, you know, like, how's that manifest itself? Or, like, in what ways do you think I could, like, help make up for that or whatever? Or did you feel like you needed to share this with me so I had an understanding of it? You know, I just would enter into a conversation. I think I share this in the book. My whole goal was to get my son to bring me his sin. I was like, that's when I know I've got the relationship.
Wow.
Where my son's like, hey, dad, I want you to know I did this thing wrong. And so I would always say to him, Nate, this is the phrase you got to have in your head. My dad can help with that. I'm like, if you're in a car and the police pull you over and everyone's smoking weed, call me. My dad can help with this. Rather than thinking my dad's going to kill me, I want you to think my dad will help me.
Yeah.
And so I spent like a lot of time, and it genuinely ended up there. You know, like it ended up there, but it ended up there with some pain. And some of the best moments, I think, were when he'd bring me like really complexing problems. And you know, I want to respect his privacy and all that too, but he'd bring me stuff from school where he'd say, dad, I remember you shared a story about what you went through with high school and here's what I'm dealing with. And I just thought, can you give me some wisdom on that? And I was like, man, I never would have asked my dad for wisdom on that issue.
Right.
You know?
And I remember my dad telling me when I was in high school, and I don't know that this, we haven't talked about it since, but I don't know that this was actually like a tactic that he just took or whatever, but he told me, he was like, listen, there's probably nothing that you're going to get into that I haven't got into. So if you get into something, just you can always come talk to me about it.
Mm.
And sadly, I mean, looking back, I don't know that I was that kid that would have come to my dad or my mom or my dad with just anything. If I was in that car that got pulled over, would I don't know if I. But whenever I hear stories of, you know, now friends of mine who have older kids who are dealing with situations that they are coming to them with, I'm always now on the parent side of it. I'm like, that's a victory. If they're still coming to you,
yeah,
that
totally.
Is such a victory. Yeah. Mm. Just that in of itself.
So that, yeah,
we went through some hard things. Like there was a season where Nate was like, I don't think I want to be a Christian.
Mm.
And I was like, why is that? And he goes, in essence, he was like, self-denial is too hard. I'm just not sure it's worth it. And I wasn't like, I'm a pastor. I was just like, interesting. Tell me more about that. Like what's happening in your heart about self-denial?
Mm. I just well, like, even that statement that he said is so A, self-aware and B, just honest. That's a really honest thing to just say and to be secure enough to just say self-denial. That's really hard, you know,
yeah.
And especially in the Christian world, it's almost like, well, that's understood that we can deal with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The big principle I try and tell everybody, like, they say, like, man, I got so many things wrong. There's another book called, like, The Father I Wish I Was versus The Dad I Was, you know?
We've all got that book.
Yeah. But the one thing I worked, which is the true north principle is maintain an emotional bond.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So my experience is, like, parents are very good at this when the kids are little, you know? But as they're moving into adolescence, like, well, they need freedom. And it's like, they actually need you more than ever.
Wow.
They need to self-actualize. They need freedom, but they need you more than ever. And so I worked really, really hard to keep that bond. There's a moment when you tell it when your kids are drifting and you can't get them.
Absolutely.
Wow. I was like, I had one of those moments, like we're spacewalking and I just went and got them back.
Mm.
And that's like the one thing I think I did right was to try and fight for that emotional bond with both my kids.
Yeah. That's one of the things that's so apparent as you read the book is that there seems to have always been some sense of connectivity. You know, there wasn't like, we'd get together and hang for an hour and then I wouldn't see him for 5 days. And then we get, you know, there was a real sense of.
And I was always talking about it because there's times when Nate was like, why do I have to do this? Why can't I be a normal kid? And I was like, Nate, look, man, you can be a normal kid. I totally get that. But I just want you to know my relationship with you matters to me, even if it doesn't matter to you right now.
Mm.
And I don't even judge you if it doesn't matter to you right now. I've been a teenager, but I'm just telling you on my end, you matter in my life. And so I want to have this space to connect with you.
Mm.
You know, and when he was older, I think he sort of like got that, you know?
Yeah. You know, you going back a second, because so step one, as we just talked about, is that, you know, working on your wounds and working that. Another thing that I think you just don't hear in the culture is this idea, which is step two of the initiation of the sense you said it with the African proverb, but that is such a fascinating thought to me. And I think any man that reads that book is going to feel that in some way. And I think sometimes we get it peripherally because we have a man that sort of does it without it being formal and they sort of usher you into this thing. Sometimes it is your dad. Sometimes it's a coach. Sometimes it's a butcher shop owner. You know, some version of something where a man sort of says, hey, come do this, join us. This is what it looks like. But can you – I loved how you talked about this in the book – can you talk more about that? Like why and what initiation is, what that invitation is, and then why it's so important?
Well, I think what it does is it creates a psychological barrier, you know, like I ask the question, like, when did you know that you're a man?
Hmm.
You know, like when did that happen? It's like you had your first beer, had sex, drove, got your license. Like what is the... We're always like, kind of like, I don't know. And it's like, when did you become a man? What was that process? Like, gosh, I don't know. And if you ask my son, he'll tell you when I ran into the water off a beach in Spain and my dad blessed me, that's when I became a man.
Hmm.
So I think you need these psychological marks. I think you need these places that sever you from childhood in a healthy way.
Yeah.
good disruption and welcome and a desire, like you're wanted.
Yeah,
I want to bring you into this. Come on in. There's a place waiting for you. Come and join this great tradition. Mm. So I think it's very, very healthy. It's it tells a man he's wanted. It tells a man his energy is good or is possibly good. And I think it provides sort of a psychological stability and orientation in a very confusing time.
Yeah.
And I think that's the gift. You know, what you're going through is normal. You're right on track, even though it feels weird. You're not alone. You're where everybody else has been. And so just settle in. Just walk through this.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's. I was going to say, too, one of the other things I thought was one of the craziest and most amazing things, and I got so choked up reading this, was your wife's involvement in that process. And we have a lot of moms that listen and women that listen to this podcast, but can you sort of share about that, too, about your wife sitting
with... Yeah, so to be clear, that is the most controversial thing in my book, man. Mm-hmm. I was getting pushback on that from the editors. I was getting pushback all around on that. Yeah. There's a thing called a severing dinner. I don't know what I called it in the book. I might have softened it, but a severing dinner is basically where my wife, when my son turned 13, took him out for dinner and said, "I am handing you over to your father and the community of men to be turned into a man. This will be hard and painful. You're going to want to come for me to comfort, and I will not give it to you. I'll push you back to your father." Hmm. And so she, you know, took him out, you know, read this prayer over him, gave him a series of gifts. And my son and my wife have an extraordinary relationship. So good, high communication. It's awesome. But the goal is to say, hey, look, man, if you will never, what men ache for in many ways is belonging in a community of men where they're recognized as adding value. We long to be in a room and be recognized by our peers that we contribute and that we're one of them. We ache for that. Mm-hmm. And if there's always a way out back to the comfort of a woman, it'll stop that formative place in the culture of men. And therefore, what ends up happening is that men will use women for comfort. Anyway, like I was trying to just get that lesson in seed form. So my wife took him out and did all of this, and she ran in the room in tears, and she was like, "It's terrible." But when I was processing that with Nate, I said to him, like, we're walking on the Camino. I said, "Hey, man, this was like a little pretty controversial. Just so you know, I'm getting a little bit of pushback on the controversy of the severing dinner." And he was like adamant, viscerally adamant. "No, that was so important in my journey. That was so helpful for me to understand where I was and what was actually happening." And all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, the goal is basically to push him back into the community of men. Now, I want to say this. This may be sounding like sort of like barbaric and, you know, and all the rest of it. Look, I'm not interested in producing male stereotypes. The goal is not shirtless men eating meat with their hands in the woods here at all.
Yeah.
I'm actually just trying to help produce godly men. And I think a part of that happens best in a community of other godly men. A big part of my conviction is that male formation has to happen in private in the company of men in order to be effective. Because if it happens in the presence of women, it often becomes performative or women mock it. They mock men's attempts. Because you live in a world in many ways where women feel way more competent and confident than the typical man does. I pastor a church in the middle of New York City, 70% female, and I can tell you it's a church filled with successful women and men who struggle with confidence. And so it's like a lot of that comes by being formed in secret, so you feel like you have something to offer. You're bringing a gift. You're bringing strength to serve and that sort of thing. So it's complicated. There's so many stereotypes that are out there. Mothers play a very important role, but I felt like all of the literature that I studied says there's got to be some sort of withdrawal from a primary orientation from the mother towards a community of men for development. And only anecdotally, that seemed to resonate very deeply with Nate.
What did you find? What did your wife find, and how it changed their relationship? You know, if she's no longer the place that he comes to find comfort, What did that dynamic look like then? And what does it look like now?
Here's the thing. They would still, they would still talk. I mean, of course. But she would say a lot of things like, you need to talk to your father about that. You know, you need to suck that up, Nathan. You know, like you got to suck that up. I know it's hard. I mean, so I'm talking with a series of five shifts from adolescence into manhood. And the first shift is from ease to difficulty. It's like boys want ease, men embrace difficulty. And so Christy would often reinforce with things like, it sounds like that you're looking for ease, but you know the pathway forward is actually difficulty. So you need to talk to your dad about doing the difficult thing. So it's like shared parenting in that framework.
Yeah. You know? Well, when Dave and I were talking about this interview just a couple hours ago, I mean, that's something that I wrote down at the bottom of my list that I wanted to talk to. And it doesn't surprise me that it's controversial, but it's very interesting. I think that, like, hearing you explain it and walk away thinking two things. Like, one, you do have to recognize the importance of validation from other men. And I do think, and I can only speak for myself, that is something that is never going to go away. That is something that I need from my dad. That is something that I need from my peers. You know, you want to feel valuable, like you're saying, and like you belong and that you contribute. And but it's so interesting. I never would have thought about it in that context of sort of walking it down step further and seeing it as like, well, this will put, you know, these men on a healthy path so that they can have healthy relationships with women, their future wives, their, you know, but that's just really fascinating. Hopefully people will
I tell people too, it's like, hey, if you disagree with my stuff, ready? So I said, well, don't do it then. You didn't like the book?
Yeah.
Then don't implement anything from the book.
Yeah.
Just do whatever you want then. Come up with your own vision of intentionality.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I was just like, I got to the point with my kids where I was like, I gotta do better. I gotta create a pathway for generational blessing. How do they do this in history? Who's doing this the best in the world? So I tried to read all the books and then summarize them and bring all the best pieces together in one place, which I didn't feel like existed. I couldn't find it. I wouldn't have bothered with it. I would have used it. And if you don't like a part of it, don't do that part.
Yeah.
It's simple. Yeah. Like, I'm not like a, this is the way. I'm like, hey, this was pretty good for me.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of reading. There's a bunch of really helpful stuff in here. Use what's good. But the principle is this: be intentional.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So if the one takeaway I would get from the book is just like, don't wing this.
Yeah, I love that.
Not wing the formation of your kids.
Yeah.
They're too important. Look how jacked up the world is. There's too much at stake.
Yeah.
Like, have a plan. Take the same gifts and energies that you use for your career and at least give some of that to your children.
Right.
And so basically I tried to say, like, and here's a pretty general outline to get you started.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, as I read it, I really thought for John, and I'm referring to you, I thought for someone that's writing and doing this, this is like another job. You know, it took a lot of your time, but I thought it was such a great, I thought, well, that's probably the best job you've ever got, right? I mean, like, that's, if there's a job that really has eternal and familial, you know, importance, it would be, to spend this time on putting in your kids.
Yeah.
So people say, like, the one I'm doing with my daughter right now, it takes me about 2 hours a lesson. And I do 6 lessons a week with her.
Oh my gosh!
But my thing is,
three in the morning.
No. What I'm doing now is, like, on the stuff with my daughter, I'm just going to sell those lessons because the typical dad doesn't have the margin to do that.
Yeah, right.
I'm actually trying to go back through the primal path and actually put into seed form, like, hey, here's you want to do Easter difficulty? Here's 30 devotions on Easter difficulty to do. I'm realizing it's like people don't quite have that margin or whatever. Yeah, I'll say this. You reap what you sow.
Mm.
Don't anticipate a beautiful relationship in the future if you sow minimal effort into it.
Mm.
That's it. Mm. So what? Just think about the kind of relationship you want to have and then give time towards it. So I tell you, people I did years with no media intake. People were like, oh, what'd you think of that show? I was like, I didn't see that show. Because here was the thing. It was only a few years.
It's only
a few years. It feels like forever. And you're so tired from getting them alive through childhood.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, my daughter goes off to college in 5 months. And I'm done, man. I'm an empty nester. It is over. Now, I moved to a different kind of relationship and parenting. Yeah. But the thing we're talking about is over.
Yeah.
And so to me, I just had a very, very real awareness of time.
Yeah.
And I said, when I look back 5 years from now, when my son is in college, will I ever want to watch that game? Can I see SportsCenter highlights? And will that be enough? And how can I take that hour and just brainstorm cool stuff to do with my son? And so I just made that decision. I made the one big decision that stopped me having to make hundreds of small struggling decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of time, I know we've got a few more minutes. We have two questions we end with. We'll get to the second. I have one more kind of last question before we get to those two last quick ones. Being a parent, two things I think about a lot, and John and I know have talked about this a lot too. I would love to hear you speak to these kind of two questions. How do we care and love for and love our kids in a way that, one, they can stay true to this faith that we believe and that they hopefully will believe? Because you see, this is the age of deconstruction and so many people kind of leaving the faith. And then two, that they'll want to be around us when they're older. How can we think about that as parents to go, look, how do you think about that?
Oh, well, I mean, a huge part of it is I'll just tell you a story, okay? This is going to be very, very controversial. And it's going to sound hypercritical, but it's not meant to be. I was preaching in Nashville at Church of the City, and the hotel I was staying in had a girls' high school volleyball tournament staying in it. And I just watched all these families, and I was like, okay, none of these people are going to church. It's on Sunday morning because I'm leaving to preach. Okay. What are they talking about? Where's the anxiety? Where's the reward mechanisms in this ecosystem? Now, if you're a Christian family, where is Jesus? Where's the priority of the body of Christ? And I just thought, every parent who lets their kids in high school do radical travel sports is communicating to them that you being on this team is more important than your formation in the body of Christ, and that you just can't compete with that level of formation. So here's what you say to your kids. Our faith is a foundation, but it's actually secondary to every other thing we do. And then you don't be in surprise when they go to college where they put every other thing like they've been trained to do before church. And then at some point you never go back. It just it shook me, the formative power of this travel team. And I just listened to so many conversations at breakfast and all the rest of it. And I just thought, trying to catch up on a podcast during the week actually says what I value the most is this team, and I will supplement faith on the side. I think if you sow that, you will reap that later. I'm not against sports. I think sports actually can be a very, very helpful formative mechanism. But the professionalization of everything into the adolescent years does tremendous damage, I think. Being aware of the formative power of youth culture right now to functionally disciple Jesus out of the center of our kids' lives. And then what a tension it will be when your kids can't participate like they want to in this formative power. So, lots of prayer, lots of modeling, lots of participation. What I would say is don't talk about God. Model God and live the way of Jesus, actual tangible spiritual practices so that your kids actually have a life of doing the Christian life, not just talking about it and living an American life. And so that way when they're older, they've actually been trained in the way of Jesus. I think that's huge. Secondly, how do you create things? How do you get your kids to want to be around you when you're older? I think one of the best things about that is family rhythms, rituals, and traditions that are so life-giving they want their kids to have access to them too. So, you know, we got a whole series of things like the Tyson family does. And like this is us. This is what Tysons do.
Right.
You know, like pleasure stacking on the Sabbath, that's Tyson. That's Tyson right there. You know, like we've got stuff we do. And we've got places we go. And I think my kids, they've already said to me, it's like when I'm older, I am 100% doing this with my kids.
Wow.
So yeah.
Make it so rich that they want to bring their kids into it.
I love that. Okay. That is beautiful. Last two questions we always ask this. So first question I'll ask you, what is the one thing you want your kids to know?
I want them to know the Father's love. I think that is the hermeneutic of the universe. You know, it's like the Father's love, the Father's heart. You were created by God, for God. Your destiny is to do life with God, and you are headed into direct communion with Him. And if my kids get that, I think that's the most important thing.
Okay, and last question. What do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
My dad loved me with all of his might. He wasn't perfect, but he just went all in. My dad was a broken man. He was a flawed man, but he was a freaking funny man who showed up most of the time. Something like that.
Well, your kids will be able to pull up an iCal,
a book,
and be like, let me show you. You see this? That's not 4 p.m. That's 4 a.m. My dad loved me.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, gosh, we could talk for hours. I got to run, but
yeah.
That's enough to get us started.
No, that's great. That's great. That's session one.
Thank you for writing this book.
Thank you so much for your time. I can't encourage everybody that's listening. It's The Intentional Father is one part of it, which is called A Practical Guide to Raise Sons of Courage and Character. The other one is The Primal Path, which is you can find that online. It's super helpful. You subscribe. It's all there. And hopefully someday soon you'll have the female, the daughter version.
I'm working on that. It's called 50 Pieces of My Heart.
Oh, I love that.
And it's the 50 deposits every dad needs to put into his daughter's life before she leaves home.
Gosh.
That's great. Come on, I'm going to try to get that book before you get it.
I think that one's a self-pub, man. So,
yeah.
I'll help you publish it.
Yeah.
Because I've got two daughters and I need help.
Yeah. John, thank you for your time, man.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.